Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parent Factors with your host, Dr. John DeGarmo. Today, families are a lot different than they were in the past. So whether you have one child or you're part of a blended family, you can depend on Dr. John for weekly insights, answers, tips, and solutions. Now, the world of parenting is right at your fingertips. Here's Dr. John.
You know, there have been times as a parent where I've looked back at the decisions I've made, and I have asked myself, what if I did this? What if I said this? What if I could have done a better job? How could I have been a better parent? You know, we all have those questions as parents. There are times when we look back and we think to ourselves, what if I did something different? Well, our special guest this week, Sharon Cosby, has written a book that addresses that very, very topic. Her first book is called Praying for Your Addicted Loved One, 90 and 90. And her new book that's coming out soon called Hope Hooks, Where Do I Hang My Hope? It's got some fantastic information. And Sharon has asked herself those very same questions. Calling in from Florida this week, Sharon, welcome to Parent Factors with Dr. John.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be with you.
So, Sharon, your brand new book coming out, Hope Hooks, Where Do I Hang My Hope? You have had a journey with your son when he was 14 years old that many of us can relate to. Tell us about your journey with your son when he was 14 years of age.
Okay. Our son was diagnosed with ADD when he was 6 years old. So we put him on medication, and that really began the journey with medicating. When he was 14, he started smoking marijuana. He liked it better than the Ritalin because he could eat. The Ritalin suppressed the appetite. And he began drinking, and it escalated from marijuana to ecstasy, Xanax, cocaine, anything that was out there, he pretty much used it.
Wow. Sharon, at what point did you realize that your son was taking drugs?
He was probably between 15 and 16. He had never been a good student, so the change in grades was not one of the fun.
Right.
But just it was more of the lack of motivation was incredible. And it just kind of came out that he was smoking the weed, and then I began to detect the alcohol usage, and when he was 16, he was full tilt with alcohol, and we put him in treatment at age 16.
Wow. And at this time, Sharon, you were a parent of two other children as well, correct?
Yes. Josh is in the middle of two girls.
Sharon, how did you manage being a parent to two other children while at the same time dealing with the challenges that your son Josh was giving you?
Well, if you ask the girls, they would say not well. He was the squeaky wheel, so we didn't manage them well. They were off doing their own stuff, but because his was so egregious and in your face, I don't mean disrespectful in your face,
right. But
it was so obvious that there was a problem that the girls kind of got pushed to the side. And they were good students, and so there wasn't the concern with grades and things like that. And so we didn't manage it well.
My wife and I struggle with that sometimes, too. Currently, we have 8 children in our home, and that fluctuates. That number fluctuates from biological, adoptive, and foster children. We had 10 a few weeks ago. We're down to 8 right now, ranging from ages from 1 to 16 years of age. And, you know, it's really hard to focus on all the children, particularly when you have children in your home who are more challenging than others. You know, we've had some children come through our home who have been addicted to drugs or have had emotional needs. So here you are struggling with Josh, and you have your two other daughters. what kind of path did Josh end up? I believe now he is recovered. Is that correct?
Correct. He was in and out of treatment. He dropped out of school in the 10th grade. And he would work, McDonald's, wherever. He has always worked odd jobs and things. He just was in, he was in five or six different treatment centers. He would get clean and sober, quit going to meetings, and relapse. And that's pretty much been his history until this last time. He got clean and sober February the 18th, 2010. And so far has done very well. He married, and they have two babies, two children, a seven-year-old and a nine-month-old. And things are going well.
You don't consider him recovered, though. Is that right?
No.
Tell us why.
No. Because addiction is a chronic relapsing disease, and it's always there. We have a friend who is 30 years clean and sober, and he goes to a meeting every day because he knows what his triggers are, and he knows that he needs the fellowship of his is alcohol, of AA. So, yes, right now he is clean. My son is clean and sober, but he could relapse any day if he doesn't do what he knows to do to maintain his sobriety. It could happen to him. It could happen to anybody.
Right, right. No, Sharon, I was sharing with somebody earlier today at a conference I was speaking at about one of our former daughters from foster care who was taken from us after a year and a half in our home and placed in another home in another state where she was subsequently abused, physically, sexually abused.
Okay.
And I kept asking myself later on, and I continue to ask myself to this day, what if? What if I did something different? Or I should have done this. I should have done that. Sharon, how do you deal with a temptation? I'm sure that you had to look back and say, you know, I should have done this as a parent.
Absolutely. We moved to Florida from Alabama in 1992. And we have second-guessed that decision to move. You know, if we had stayed in Alabama with our family, would this have happened? If I had not gone to work, would this have happened? If my husband worked for an international company, that's what moved us to Florida. You know, if he were not working like he was, would this have happened? And I don't have an answer for that. My son says, well, as a matter of fact, last weekend, Danny and Josh talked about that. Do you think it would have made a difference if we had gone camping and fishing and done those kinds of things? And he said, probably not. So I don't beat myself up like I used to.
Right, right, sure.
Because, you know, I did not give him the alcohol, and I did not give him the drugs.
Yeah.
You know, we're a Christian family. We took our children to church, and we were involved in their lives.
Right,
but
right.
They made some bad choices.
Right, right, and there are consequences to those choices, and those consequences affect everybody, not just your son.
Absolutely.
Job. Now, Sharon, you've been published in Guideposts. You've had some writings in the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Your first book, Praying for Your Addicted Loved One, 90 and 90. What prompted you to decide to write that first book, Sharon?
I was frustrated that as a parent of an addict, I could not find anything that helped me. It's, you know, most of the literature is for the addict, and I couldn't find anything from a Christian viewpoint. So I decided to write my own, and I had started with a memoir, and Cece Murphy, a great writer, I met him at a writer's conference, and he encouraged me to tell my story in a different format, so that's why I chose the 90-day devotional. And the 90 and 90 is special to me because When an addict goes into early recovery, they are encouraged to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. So while your loved one does their 90 in 90, as the parent or spouse of that person, you are doing 90 days of devotions. And you're hearing our family story, but you're hearing it with a taste of hope. There's always hope as long as your loved one is breathing. There is hope that today is the day that the light will come on and the transformation will begin. And that's why I wrote the book.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Can you tell us a little bit about this book? You said you have devotions in there. What are those devotions? Mm-hmm. What are those devotions focused on or centered upon?
The majority of them are based on Jeremiah 30 and 31. Those were the two chapters that I read October the 8th, 2009, when Josh was at the lowest he had ever been in his addiction. And so I pulled out the verses that spoke to me that morning. It was early in the morning, about 3 o'clock, and I based the devotions on those scriptures that touched me at that time. And then I filled in the 90 days with other scriptures that deal with hope and recovery and redemption, the gist of it.
Right. You're listening to Parent Factors with Dr. John, and we have with us this week Sharon Cosby, the author of the brand new book, Hope Hooks, Where Do I Hang My Hope? Sharon, this book is not yet out, but it is coming out soon. What will this new book be about?
This one is actually a prayer journal, and each day has a scripture dealing with hope. So it's not just for addiction. It's for whatever you feel hopeless in. And each day I have 3 pointed questions, writing prompts, and it's to get you as the reader to write your own hope story. I can't answer the question for you, where do you hang your hope?
Right.
But hopefully by reading these daily scriptures and the prompts, you will answer that question for yourself and write your own hope story.
Where did you hang your hope, Sharon, when you were struggling with the challenges with Josh? Where did your hope hang?
My hope, I hung it on Jeremiah 31, 15 through 17. And those two verses got me through many a sleepless night, and I go to them frequently. I still remind myself, it's not over. And if I get sketchy, I go right back to my two verses.
So Sharon, whether it's an alcohol addiction or gambling or drugs or something else, pornography, whatever it may be, what would you say to people who think that they don't have a problem or that a certain one loved one of theirs doesn't have a problem? You know, so many people who are addicted to whatever it may be, they fail to recognize, they refuse to acknowledge that they have a problem. What would you say to them?
Well, I would say look at your situation. If they are in jail or if they have lost their job again, if they have racked up DUIs, I would say, you know, look at your situation. Do you not think there is a problem? But until they acknowledge that problem, really there's not much that you can do, but just help them understand these are the facts. This is a situation. And surely you can see there is a problem.
Right. Now, how about those family members, Sharon, who are going through something that you went through, something similar, you know, when you were struggling with Josh, when you're just discovering that Josh had a problem. How about those people who are just discovering now that a loved one in their home or their family is going through a problem? What would you say to them?
I would tell them to take care of yourself. it was a hard lesson. I cannot fix my son. They cannot fix their loved one's problem. Self-care is not selfish. We have to take care of ourselves. If we get down physically, financially, emotionally, spiritually, we will be of no good to our loved one when the light bulb does come on. And I have some physical problems now that I think are directly related to the continued stress that I have been under for all these years.
You know, you hit the nail on the head there. One of my more popular seminars that I conduct across the country is taking care of yourself during times of loss with foster parents. When a foster parent loses a child, when a child leaves their home, it's often like losing their own child, you know, a member of their family. There's feelings of grief and loss. And foster parents can also experience feelings of burnout. And I'm often telling my foster parents, you need to take care of yourself. Take care of your marriage. Because if you don't take care of yourself or take care of your marriage during those times of stress, during those times of great crisis, you're going to be no good for anybody, not only for yourself, but for your family members, your marriage, your people at work, your friends, whatever it may be. So I appreciate that you said to take care of yourself. Sharon, how did you do that?
I was getting ready to say, and I can say that because I didn't do that. And that's why I think I have the resulting physical problems that I have. My husband and I started a Naranon group in our community last year. And I wish that I had done that years ago, that I had participated. I went a few times, and it was just not a good fit for me. But the people who are in our group are fabulous, and I am learning it's okay to take care of me, that I'm not being selfish.
We're going to hear more about that. We have to take a commercial break right now. But when we come back, we're going to hear more about that, and we're also going to hear about how someone during the Christmas season can take care of themselves when they slip into addictive behaviors. You're listening to Parent Factors. We'll be back after these messages.
We'll be back with Parent Factors and Dr. John right after these messages.
Now there is a book available for children coming into foster care. The book is called A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story. Written in simple language and fully illustrated in color, this storybook is designed to help children in care or moving into care to settle in and answer some of their sensitive questions. Accompanied by notes for adults on how to use the story with children, it will be a useful book for foster parents and caseworkers, as well as social workers, teachers, and anyone else working with children in foster care. A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story, available at Amazon and where all books are sold.
Greetings. My name is Daniel Heimpel, and I'm the publisher of The Chronicle of Social Change, an online news site covering child welfare and juvenile justice. Be sure to check out our money and business section, which includes a huge database of youth services funding opportunities from private foundations and all levels of government. Thanks for taking a look at chronicleofsocialchange.org.
Did you ever wish there was a manual for foster parents? Well, now there is. This manual is a comprehensive guide offering proven, friendly advice for novice and experienced parents alike. Distilling many years' experience into one book, U.S. foster and adoptive parent John DeGarmo combines his own hard-won wisdom with that of fellow foster parents. He describes what to expect from the process, how to access help and support, and how to ensure the best care for your child. The Foster Parenting Manual, available now in stores and at Amazon.com.
Did you know there are more than 400,000 children in foster care? Foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers stand in the gap for these children, and they need support too. The National Foster Parent Association has been the voice of foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers for more than 40 years, advocating for thousands of families who open their heart and homes to children in need. Learn more about NFPA at www.nfpaonline.org or call 1-800-557-5238.
Hi, this is Christian Molesky, owner, editor, and creator of Foster Focus magazine, the only monthly foster care magazine in America. You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo. Enjoy and visit fosterfocusmag.com.
And now back to Dr. John and Parent Factors.
We're back with Parent Factors with Dr. John, and this week's special guest is the author of the brand new book, Hope Hooks, Where Do I Hang My Hope? This is Sharon Cosby. So Sharon, you know, we're going into the holiday time season. We're going into the Thanksgivings and the Christmases and Kwanzaas and New Year's, whatever it may be. The holidays are here. So what can a person do to make sure that they don't become, you know, unhinged or slip into an addictive behavior around this type of year? We hear a lot about people who drink too much from the holidays, or maybe they're gambling too much, or they're spending all their money on Christmas presents, or shopping addictions, or maybe even contemplating suicide. What would you say to those people?
If it's the addict, I would encourage them to go to their meetings and possibly increase the number of meetings they go to. If they only go to one a week, then two would be better. And just stay in touch with that recovery community. You know, that is so important, that if they do feel the temptation, if they have a sponsor, they should call their sponsor immediately. And if they don't have a sponsor, then I would suggest that they get one immediately, because it's just crucial that they have that sponsor in their life. If it's the family member that I were speaking to, I would tell them to be careful of the kinds of parties and celebrations. If your loved one is an alcoholic, then I think, out of respect for them, don't serve alcohol.
Right.
You just, and, you know, for everybody, it's a lifestyle adjustment.
Sure.
And the addict, yes, has to make that choice. But then if we want to encourage our loved one in their recovery, then we have to make lifestyle changes also. It's a family disease. It's not just the alcoholic or the druggie or the porn addict. It's all of us. It affects every member of the family.
Well, let's go back to that. You said earlier that you have two other daughters, and, you know, they were, how were they affected? When Josh was first experiencing his challenges with his drug addiction, when he was 15 or 16 or 17 years of age, how were the other members, how were your other children affected? You said that they were, but give us an example of how they were affected.
Mm-hmm. Our younger daughter kind of followed in his footsteps. She partied with him. So in that regard, he took her down a dark path.
Right.
She didn't get to the depths he did. But they were affected in that there was some jealousy because of all the attention that was put on him. There were resentments that they have now worked through. I think the resentment was probably the biggest thing, because it was all about Josh.
Wow.
And they didn't get the attention that they needed to.
So how does it, now you have had that experience, so how does a family who has multiple children, how do they make sure that those who are not having addictive problems or drug problems or challenges, whatever it may be, how do they get the attention that they need?
If I got a do-over,
right,
what I would have done or what I would do, I would take my girls for dinner, just us, just the two of us. I would set aside special time for them.
Sure.
I would listen to their hearts. You know, what is it that I can do to make it better? And I would be more involved in their lives.
Right. That's something my wife and I strive to do. And we don't always do it very well, but we strive to have what's called a special time with each child. a month. And that can be challenging, but it is so important. It's so important because every child needs to have some time with their parents, time with mommy or daddy or both. So that is important,
right,
because you don't want them to slip through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping, Sharon, that daughter of yours is doing well now.
She is.
Oh, that's
all
good.
Three of our children are doing well. You know, they share their own stories and have ministered to other people in similar situations. And our family, in my opinion, has been so redeemed. And out of the hurt and the heartache that we experienced, we are able to touch other families who are where we were a long time ago.
So,
and,
Sharon,
you know, we have to
wrap the interview up. We're about out of time.
Okay.
If you would give only one piece of advice to someone who is dealing with an adoptive family, what would that one piece of advice be?
Take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, thank you, Sharon, so much. Now, Sharon, you have a website. Can you tell us about your website, Mission Recovery? Tell us about that.
Mission Recovery, my husband is an addictions counselor. He left a corporate job and became an addictions counselor. So it's kind of a combo, his and mine, but it's mission-recovery.com.
And what can they find on this website, Sharon?
Information, articles that he did some interviews for, some articles. It's got my old blog post and some of our current speaking things. We speak, we do workshops for parents. Our focus is prevention. And we love sharing our story with parents in a preventive mode, and so they can get information about the workshops that we do. I speak to women's groups, women's
right.
ministries, things like that.
Now, Sharon, if somebody wants to get a hold of your first book entitled Praying for Your Addicted Loved One, 90 in 90, the devotion book, Sharon, where can they get that book?
The best is Amazon.
Okay, all right. And your brand new book coming out, Hope Hooks, Where Do I Hang My Hope? When can listeners expect that book to come out?
I just have heard from the publisher today, and so she is just now starting on it, and I don't know if it's been accepted yet. So I'm hoping that she's going to take it in that 4 to 5 months.
Well, I'm sure she will take it, Sharon. I have no doubt. After listening to your story today, what an inspirational story. What fantastic advice. Sharon, thank you so much for being.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being open about your family and open about your story, open about your faith, and being so helpful and inspiring. Thank you for being part of the program. All right,
that was
Sharon Cosby, author of the book Praying for Your Addicted Loved One, 90 and 90. You can find out more about her at her website, www.mission.com. Find out about it. You know, she's right. There are so many families. Every family has those deep, dark secrets, right? And every family has somebody in their family that they're struggling with maybe addiction to drugs, maybe addiction to alcohol, maybe addiction to gambling or pornography, whatever it may be. But Sharon hit it so importantly there when she said that you cannot change the person and you cannot change their addicts. You cannot change their addictions. You cannot change how they heal. All you can do is pray for them, work with them, encourage them, support them. But what you also must do, as Sharon pointed out, is take care of yourself. Do not let the stress and the crisis burn you out, because then you're no good for that family member, and you're no good for yourself as well. So take care of yourself. Once again, I want to thank our special guest, Sharon Cosby. What a great, inspiring story she had for us. And take care of yourself out there. You want more information? Find it on my website, Dr. John DeGarmo Foster Care. You can also find me on Twitter and Facebook as well. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another episode of Parent Factors with Dr. John.